back to hour two of this Thursday edition of the Hagmann Report. We're joined by Paul McGuire. PaulMcGuire.us is the website. His new book, Conquering the Matrix. Make sure you check that out, and you can order that right from his site. Right before the break, he was talking about Van Jones and all these leftist politicians, media pundits who all believe that communist and communist and socialist nations are the way to go. And Paul, just before the break, you were saying how every communist nation in history has failed economically, and then you were cut off as we went to the break.
Yeah, I think it's very important that everybody understands, because the mainstream media, of course, is concealing this fact, because their job is not to present the truth, it's to conceal the truth, because they're agents of the globalist elite. So, when we look at history and modern history, when we look at every single nation which became communist or Marxist or socialist, okay, every single one of those nations, without exception. Now, the communist leaders at the beginning said that socialism is just a stepping stone into communism. So really, this whole notion of socialism as being some kind of different, modified communism is a total lie. According to the communist revolutionary leaders, they said repeatedly that the only purpose for socialism is like a halfway point to get into communism. So if you're looking at a socialist society, the plan of a socialist society is to move it to the next step, which is communism, which is brutal. So, without exception, when we look at every society that is communist, Marxist, or socialist, to varying degrees as to where they are in the timeline in progressing into Marxism and communism, without exception, this is a fact, not debatable. This is not a debatable issue for a millennial or a Marxist professor. They need to be told to shut up and walk out of the classroom. I mean, literally pull their pants down and get the class to laugh at them. They don't know what they're talking about. They lie. There is no communist nation in the history of mankind or in our present time which ever increased economic prosperity. It never produced social justice or equality. It never produces this workers' utopia. It never produces a society where the wealth is equally distributed. There's no wealthy and there's no poor. In fact, every communist, socialist, Marxist nation, without exception, produces a society which increases poverty, which lowers the standard of living. Every communist nation, without exception, has a communist elite, which are the super wealthy on top. And then they have the slave class. So it's a total lie that communism produces a classist society and there's social justice. Moscow has more billionaires living in Moscow than any place on planet Earth, because communism always creates a super wealthy upper class that rules and reigns. And then, in terms of freedom, every single communist Marxist society, without exception, removes all freedom from the people. So they don't have what we have in America in our Constitution. They don't have freedom of speech. They don't have freedom of religion. They don't have freedom of the press. They don't have freedom from unreasonable search and seizure. They don't have the right to have guns. They're stripped of all their freedoms. And every communist and Marxist society, again, without exception, murders millions of people for no justifiable reason. And in the big communist revolutions, like the ones that occurred in Russia and China and some of these other nations, literally hundreds, over 200 million people, or 260 million people, that's a conservative estimate, were murdered, starved to death, sent to mental hospitals to rot and die, sent to concentration camps in Siberia, sent to farms that were deliberately rigged to starve the masses in China and other places, in Russia and the Ukraine. And so in every one of these communist nations, you have a death toll collectively of around 260 million people through starvation, shooting them in the head, torturing them, sending them to concentration camps or whatever. It's always, always, always a bloodbath. And in fact, the very pioneer revolution, which was the foreshadowing of all communist revolutions, was the French Revolution, because really the French Revolution was the first communist revolution. And what happened to this idealistic, lofty concept of a better society in the French Revolution? It ended up in mass slaughter with guillotines, where the French revolutionaries beheaded tens and thousands of people, innocent people, in a bloodbath. There was nothing noble about the French Revolution. It turned into anarchy and a bloodbath. And not only that, in every communist nation without exception, in every Marxist nation without exception, true Christians that believe in the Bible and who are born again are always, without exception in a communist society, the main targets of persecution, death, and murder and torture, without exception. And why? Because true Christians that know the Word of God are a threat to a communist society. So during the French Revolution, one of the things that the French revolutionaries did, and that was the first wave of communism, is they went into the churches and they had blatant sexual orgies, drunkenness, constantly in the church sanctuaries. They had the goddess of reason, which was a female topless riding around Paris, symbolizing the Enlightenment. And then Robespierre, this revolutionary who was like a monster, began slaughtering people. When I was in Paris shortly after the Charlie Hebdo attacks, I was speaking to a church on Bible prophecy. 12,000 people attended the church. And then I went to different sites in Paris, and I went to a particular street in Paris where there's these monuments. And the monuments, ironically, is a phallic tall pyramid structure with the all-seeing eye of Lucifer prominently displayed in this monument. Okay, and there was other all-seeing eye of Lucifer and occult symbols all over these memorials to the French Revolution. Well, the guy who was giving me the tour was a Frenchman, and he explained to me that the ground that I was standing on, and I photographed it, I touched it. It was this pyramidal structure with the all-seeing eye of Lucifer. And he said, right here on this spot, and on this entire ground where the memorial is, this is where, during the French Revolution, they had row after row of guillotines, and where they beheaded people in a mass bloodbath who disagreed with the communist revolution. And then I instantly recognized that the reason they had the pyramid of the all-seeing eye of Lucifer here was that it had the all-seeing eye of Lucifer pyramid had to be erected on top of a mass satanic Luciferian blood sacrifice, which was what the mass beheadings were. So the story of communism is a Frankenstein narrative. In the 60s, Rockefeller went to, it was either the late 60s or the early 70s, Rockefeller visits China, and he writes an op-ed article for the New York Times, where he calls China the greatest accomplishment in mankind's history, and how they represent the ideal society, and America would do well to become more like communist China. So this pig, Rockefeller, he knows full well 100 million people got slaughtered during the communist Chinese revolution. He knows full well that fact, and he knows full well that the reason they were an economic miracle is because they employed slave labor and they shot, murdered, and tortured anybody that disagreed with them. He knew full well that Chairman Mao either murdered millions of the Chinese or he put together this farming program where millions of the Chinese peasants were starved to death on purpose. So he's fully aware of all this, and he says this is the ideal society. And he writes an article to that effect for the New York Times. Well, why did he say that? Because from his perspective as an occult globalist elite, communist societies like China are the ideal slave state, the ideal totalitarian state where the people become slaves of the elite, and because they're under surveillance and all their rights have been torn away, they're docile and compliant. So from his perspective as a master, this is a perfect slave state, which brings me to this one final point that no communist I've ever met understands. I don't think Van Jones has a clue of this. No Marxist I've ever met understands. Most Christians don't understand. And this is the greatest secret, the greatest fact of all regarding the true nature of communism. And when your listeners and viewers know this, if they don't already, this is the one secretive fact that you must know about communism. And it'll take me a sentence or two to explain it. And this is what it is. We all need to understand that communism, which gains momentum and comes into power through secret financing of the international banking families and the Illuminati and the occult globalist elite, it has a specific purpose. The globalist elite are not trying to create social justice or spread the wealth or anything else. Karl Marx, who was the father of the Communist Manifesto, who wrote the Communist Manifesto, he was a Satanist. That's a historical fact. It's not a conjecture. He attended his sister's church, and it was a satanic church. So the leader of communism, an author of Communist Manifesto, Karl Marx, was a practicing Satanist. That is not a coincidental fact. The basic tenets of communism are word for word mirror copies of the basic tenets in the Illuminati Manifesto, written in sometime around 1776 or afterwards, and penned by Adam Weishaupt, the founder of the Illuminati. So the Illuminati Manifesto, which is clearly written by the Illuminati and the Illuminati globalist elite and the wealthiest and most powerful people on planet Earth, it is their ideas. The Illuminati Manifesto is written to give power and control and wealth to the globalist elite, who are Luciferian. So why would Karl Marx, who's pretending to be a champion of the people in social justice and wealth distribution, why would he copy word for word the language and thinking of the Illuminati Manifesto in order to create the Communist Manifesto? He did so for this reason. The Communist Manifesto is a mirror copy of the Illuminati Manifesto. But it also exposes the true purpose of communism and the Communist Manifesto. The Communist Manifesto and communist revolutions are designed for this specific purpose, and this is non-debatable, it's a fact. They are not designed to spread the wealth, create social justice, bring about a workers' paradise, and create paradise on earth and make everybody happy. That is not the purpose of a communist revolution. A communist or Marxist revolution is a ploy. It's a con game by the super wealthy globalist elite and the international banking families. The communist revolution is a tool of the globalist occult elite. And what it accomplishes through the Communist Manifesto is it cons and brainwashes the people into thinking that if they carry out this communist revolution, the wealth will be spread, we'll have social justice and utopia. That was never the purpose of the Illuminati when they created the Communist Manifesto. The purpose of communism and the Communist Manifesto is to create a violent revolution which overthrows an existing capitalistic benevolent order where people have some degree of freedom. And under the pretense of a revolution for the people and spreading the wealth, that's just subterfuge. The real agenda is to give the globalist elite total domination, total control of all the natural resources in a communist nation. It gives the Illuminati elite, the globalists, the opportunity to seize all the gold, the wealth, the oil, the minerals, to literally take control of all the natural resources in a communist nation, and to totally take control of all the people and make them their slaves, and to totally seize the wealth from the wealthiest people and institutions in these nations before a communist revolution happens. So once we understand in our minds that the communist revolution and the Marxist revolution have absolutely nothing to do with social justice and equalizing the wealth, it is nothing more than a mind control strategy to deceive the ignorant masses into joining a revolution which will allow the globalist elite, the international banking families, to have total control, total domination of all the wealth, the power, the money, the manpower in these communist nations. That is the true purpose, and that's why Rockefeller was praising the Chinese Revolution, because from his perspective, it's the ultimate victory. And that's the purpose of why Cuba is a slave state, North Korea is a slave state, China is a slave state, Russia is a slave state. We can go down the list. And none of them have delivered on the promise, you know, we're going to make a better society for the common man. But they have all delivered the promise of turning over everything under to the control of the globalist elite. And once people really own that truth, it will transform their perception of communism.
That's amazing. Okay, and that's a good summary.
And I like what you said, Paul, about the systems of communism not being set up for the purpose of a utopian society, instead for the purposes of control of resources and population. And that's exactly what they are trying to do here. And when you see I wanted to ask you this, along the lines of communism, right alongside it is this massive push of immigration, not only here in America, but in many of the Western societies that we have. Are they doing this huge immigration push intentionally to break down society as we have had it, to make it easier to roll in a new world order, one world government system when the time comes?
Yes, absolutely. And remember that in all of these things, it's always necessary. Communism always makes its advances. Marxism makes its advances. This forced immigration makes its advances. Always based on propaganda, persuasion, and scientific mind control, where you deliberately dumb down the people so they can't see what's really happening right before their eyes. So, The data was just released last week, and it's reliable data, that the under Obama, he allowed, and the Democrats allowed, 1 million illegals to vote for Hillary in the last election. Now, that is buried by the media. I don't see any records of law enforcement or the FBI or whoever's supposed to be in charge of that investigating it. But when you have deliberately brought in to the United States over 1 million illegals, but more importantly, you have actually mobilized 1 million illegals from target nations that are going to be voting for socialism and Marxism. And then it turns out that 1 million illegals actually voted for Hillary. And they're illegal. You have subterfuge at the highest levels, and you have a total attempt at the destruction of the credibility of our voting process in the American system. The fact that 1 million illegals voted in the election could have easily decided who won for president through cheating and fraud. And the question is, you have a globalist-controlled media which basically lies. That's their job, to lie. If they don't lie, they get fired. They're owned by the globalist elite. They're controlled by just six globalist corporations, so they hide it. And the real question we have to ask ourselves is, whatever is going on with our government and all these agencies that are supposedly protecting Americans and stuff, they're actually, in many cases, not doing that. They're active participants in the destruction of America. How did 1 million illegals get in here, and how were they allowed to vote? And why was this just discovered? I'm sure it was known before that. You can't, you know, you have a couple more elections where you rig it to that degree. And remember, communism, this is very difficult for people from a Christian perspective to really grasp. They say they grasp it, but they don't. And I'll explain the process. We're all vulnerable to it, including me, okay? We all have a basic vulnerability. We're intelligent, we're perceptive, but we make the fatal flaw that good people always have made throughout history. And I'll simplify it with this example. How is it that serial killers like Ted Bundy are able to get dates with many, many women with no problem? The reason is that they have mastered the art of charm. They project trustworthiness. And Ted Bundy then, because he uses psychological manipulation to gain women's trust, ends up murdering them and slaughtering them and carving them up in the most satanic ways imaginable. But how is it that he does this? Well, he exploits a fundamental principle in all of us, and that is good people, when they see somebody acting good, we have a tendency of thinking that other people think like us. See, we're all ingrained with this. I'm guilty myself of this, and I have to constantly remind myself not to get into this habit. We can never assume that other people think like us, have the same morality that we do, that have an active conscience, et cetera, because most of us going around naively thinking that, oh, this couldn't happen or that couldn't happen, because we're looking at ourselves saying, well, we could never do this. And I'm talking about people who have moral conflicts. Having a moral conflict means you are a spiritually alive person. You have a conscience. You struggle if you do something wrong. You feel guilty if you do something wrong. You just can't go out and do all this evil stuff. But the people who have given themselves over to evil, like the serial killers or communist revolutionaries or certain politicians or whatever, they feel no moral conflict in doing the most evil things. And so they disarm us because we can't bring ourselves to face reality, and we really can't bring ourselves to acknowledge that many, many people do not have the same moral structure that we have, and they can do the most evil things, and it doesn't even faze them. And that gives us an Achilles heel that we have to go out of our way to watch for, because there's nothing wrong with being trusting, but you have to trust and verify, and you have to always use your discernment. So our governmental structures, our bureaucrats, our school systems, our scientific institutions have been in a cultural war for the last 50 years. And they are part of a movement designed to bring in what they think is going to be a communist, Marxist, utopian state. And they, and we have to remember that the basic tenets of communism teach that the ends justify the means. In other words, under communist doctrine, you're allowed to do absolutely anything, no matter how obscene, cruel, barbaric, mean, anti-human, you name it. Anything you do, no matter how evil, is completely justifiable if it furthers the communist revolution. The ends justify the means. Well, we as Christians and moral people, we can't possibly act like that. But we forget that these other people can and are acting that way.
You're exactly right. And it's interesting, I guess it would be okay to bring this up now. It's interesting that you've got groups out there under the refuse to fascist umbrella, or the umbrella of the larger umbrellas of the anarchist groups, for example, by any means necessary.
Right.
You know, which is a coalition to defend, at least ostensibly, this coalition to defend affirmative action, immigration, and immigrant rights.
Right.
Which, that's the pretext. But when you peel back the layers, you can see the, what you said about the morality or lack thereof. I mean, you're absolutely right on this, 100%. And if we go back in history too, to look at how our country, and you touch on it, in Prophecy of the Future of America, but with Conquering the Matrix, it's indicated there as well, where post World War II, what we saw, of course, is this influx of communism or communists into our country. And what we're seeing today, some half a century later or more, is the results of that half a century plus of infiltration, indoctrination, and erosion of our morality.
And then along with that, right, you have this rise of atheism,
which is
non-believers, yeah, and people who are anti-Christian, just like this Texas shooter that we saw on Sunday. And as you know, they continue to remove God from the schools, and even in the churches, it's the Bible's being diluted to a great degree. You see this huge rise in this atheist, anti-Christian sentiment that,
right,
is, you know, mirroring or parallel with the communist / fascist movements that we're seeing in this country. And it's very concerning,
right,
to some. It takes us back to, whether people believe it's real or not, the letter of Albert Pike in the Three World Wars, where he talks about,
yes,
World War III being, you know, the Muslims as well as the atheists causing, you know, the social annihilation and civil war. Every day that goes by, it looks like that letter has become more and more true, whether it was written after 1897 or at that time that they say it was. Either way, it is alarmingly true, and it becomes more true each and every day that we move forward.
Absolutely. And this is all tied into, when you look at it from a higher level, it's tied into scientific mind control, brainwashing, persuasion. It's tied into Luciferianism and Satanism very directly. And this is what the sad thing, and I'm compassionate because I can understand why so many Christians and moral people and conservatives can't bring themselves to believe certain things. It's because they can't imagine anybody would be able to think on such a monstrous level. And they can't see how they would actually do that. But when people reach that point where they're presented with historical scientific evidence as to the reality of what we're just saying, these very tough, ugly realities. At a certain point, an individual has to do something to educate themselves so they know the truth, and then they're going to have to make the inner tough decision where they're going to say, look, I have a choice here. I can continue to believe in a lie about the pseudo-goodness of these people, or I can actually objectively look at the facts, and even though it's very unpleasant and frightening, I accept the facts because they're factual. And the reason people don't want to accept the facts because they're factual is because they exist in a mass mind control state, where they exist in a subtle trance state, in a subtle state of programming, where their perceptions have been deliberately dulled, and it's frightening for them. It's like changing gears in a, if you're not used to driving some huge truck and you're going down a mountain at 70 miles an hour, you know, you got to change gears, and it's frightening because the truck has been out of control for your lack of experience. But you've got to change gears in your thinking, and you have to finally come to the place and belly up and say, you know what, for the sake, if I truly love my neighbor as myself, and this is my challenge to Christians, most of us would agree that we're supposed to love our neighbor as ourselves. It's one of the primary commandments. But if I truly love my neighbor as myself, that means I cannot stand idly by and watch my neighbor's lives being destroyed economically, allowing their children and grandchildren to embrace ideas that are built on lies, or embrace actual brainwashing. If I truly love my neighbor, I can't stand by idly and watch them being subjected to brainwashing and mind control and persuasion, which is causing them to believe things that are false and choose behavior which is based on false beliefs, actions and political beliefs that are highly destructive and that will ultimately destroy them and their children, their family, and our nation. If I truly love my neighbor, then I'm going to have to pray and ask the Lord, through educating myself, et cetera, how I can be an agent of truth, how I can be a diplomat, so to speak, and strategically, to be blunt, deprogram them and allow them to see what's happening. And that requires skill, you know, walking into somebody's brain and disrupting everything and tossing the chairs around is probably counterproductive. When somebody is heavily invested psychologically in a belief system, even if that belief system is a lie, God's word tells us that we're supposed to be using wisdom and strategic words and things to almost surgically and gently make them aware of what's going on, bring them into the truth, and then get them involved once they recognize what's happening in fighting this evil. And that's my great concern, because people look at it and they instinctively want to hide their heads from the truth because it's upsetting. Okay, it's like this. I've used the analogy before. The mother, deep down inside, knows that her husband is sexually molesting their daughter in the bedroom quite frequently, okay? I mean, she hasn't caught him, but she deeply suspects it.
Right.
But instead of facing it, okay, because that would be very painful to her, she subconsciously suppresses that awareness and pretends it isn't happening, which is almost like living in a delusionary state. Well, meanwhile, time goes by, and then many years later, the daughter comes back to the mother, you know, having all these psychological problems, screaming at her mother, how could you do that, Mom? How could you just sit by and do nothing as Dad molested me night after night? You see? And so that principle called the normalcy bias, and I talk about this in a great detail in Conquering the Matrix, but the psychological principle that is exploited, by the way, by people who want to brainwash us. The human mind always will gravitate to what is normal to them, okay? And whatever that normal is, you'll always gravitate towards that normal state of beliefs, that normal state of consciousness. It's called the bias of normalcy. So a mother, for example, would rather suppress the knowledge of her daughter being molested by her husband, because what she's subconsciously seeking is what is normal, because what is normal is psychologically safe for her, and it's irrational, but the fact that she would disrupt her the illusion and then the normal family that they think they have superficially, that the mother would disrupt that by confronting the father and blowing it out in the open, would destroy their artificially normal world. And that is psychologically terrifying for people. And that's why they will allow these horrors to go on without ever doing anything, because they seek that normalcy bias. And people who are experts in scientific mind control know how to exploit that. So a lot of Americans are afraid of facing the truth. They'd rather just call it a conspiracy theory or whatever, than disrupting what they think is normal to find the truth. Because what will happen, and this is what they're really afraid of, subconsciously, what they're afraid of is if I open the doors in my mind and truly choose to become aware and admit that my husband is molesting my daughter sexually, then I'm going to be responsible and accountable to take actions to stop my husband from doing it. That may mean going to the social worker or the authorities or whatever. It's going to cause a lot of tension in the home as the husband screams at her, and her normalcy will be blown apart. But so there's a fear built in that if I really know the truth and accept it, then I'm going to be required to do something about it. Well, ultimately, doing something about it is the ticket to freedom. But people fear that anxiety process that you have to deal with, where you transition from denying reality to accepting reality, and then finally choosing to do what you're called to do to confront a evil reality.
Exactly, yeah. And you go into this a great deal in Conquering the Matrix, folks. Conquering the Matrix is Paul's new book. It's an absolute incredible read, and notice the title is proactive. It's active. Conquering the Matrix, in conquering that normalcy bias, with both knowledge and action. So as much of an informational book as it is instructional. I probably should have said instructional as much as informational, because it does assist you, the reader, in conquering the matrix.
And Paul, you said something about being, you know, these people, some people who are believing the lies, the propaganda, you know, wanting to keep that normalcy bias intact, not wanting to find the truth. And, you know, how you should approach them and talk to them strategically, not just, you know, spouting off, you know, your viewpoints, trying to convince them by you saying you're right. I have you're exactly right the way you said that, but nothing's impossible through God. I just have a problem with how great the political and ideological divide in this country is, that there are people on either side that are so dug in that they are never, unless some kind of life experiences changes their opinion, they're never going to switch sides of the aisle. And then you just have the people who are outright wanting others to believe in lies and wanting to mislead them at the same time.
Right. Well, those are all extremely valid concerns, because on one hand, that seems to be the way it's played out. But I just want to add one thing to it. First of all, you're absolutely right. Huge numbers of people are totally locked in to their viewpoint, you know, 50% or whatever. And they just have all these barriers. And like you said, unless something intense happens, they're not going to wake up. Okay, that's true. But we have to understand, and that's why I wrote Conquering the Matrix, because it goes into all this. Going back to the words of Aldous Huxley, you know, one of the brilliant intellectuals who wrote Brave New World, and he was one of the master intellectual British elite planners for this New World Order, which they sometimes referred to as a world socialist state, but when they were really honest, they would call it a world communist state, which is the goal of the United Nations. So he said repeatedly that when he was speaking at a convention of neuropsychiatrists in 1961 at the University of Berkeley, he said these words: in a truly efficient scientific dictatorship, the people will not even be aware of, they will not even know that they live in a scientific dictatorship. In other words, the brainwashing will be so sophisticated, so subtle, that they will be programmed so that they won't even be aware that they are living under a scientific dictatorship. And then he added to that by saying, in the truly efficient scientific dictatorship, men and women will learn to love their servitude and slavery. Now, what he was saying there is that in an effective scientific dictatorship, the elite, the globalist elite, will control the masses like slaves, but it will be done so sophisticatedly that they won't even know it. And then as to having to slave and perform all these horrible duties and stuff, in a truly effective scientific dictatorship, the people, the vast majority of people, will not even know that they've been brainwashed to love their slavery. They'll actually, the very things that are evidences of their slavery, they will love. And what he was tapping into was just how sophisticated scientific mind control had become. And this was back, he wrote, the speech was in 1961. Well, from 1961 till now, scientific mind control has accelerated as a science, and it has actually surpassed, for example, you know, computer technology. A lot of people don't know that. It's not some, you know, we're not back in the days of MK Ultra and Manchurian Candidate. That was really old style psychological control. So this plays a very important role in understanding why people who call themselves Christians and conservatives, why at least 50% of the population, why they hold to these beliefs, even though these beliefs are contradicted by facts, why they can't see the obvious, and why their behavior is such and such. And the reason for that, and it goes to what you're saying, how will they wake up unless there's a crisis or something? The reason for that is they're under very sophisticated scientific mind control. Now, I break this down in Conquering the Matrix because it's very important for people to realize this. You can't change somebody's beliefs on a one-to-one basis, on a mass basis, you know, like your radio program or TV programs, etc. You can't change their belief system because until you first understand that there is a psychological component to their belief system, that there is a spiritual component to their belief system, and perhaps most importantly, there is the scientific mind control aspect to their belief system. And I do want to say that all scientific mind control, the kind that Huxley was talking about, what the Germans did with MK Ultra, Manchurian candidates. All scientific mind control has its roots and origins in ancient empires and ancient occult secret societies. So, for example, and I explained this in Conquering the Matrix. So, for example, in ancient Egypt and in ancient Babylon, Daniel, the prophet, in Daniel chapter 9, he is one of the many occult advisors that the king of Babylon has working around them, around him. And the king of Babylon regularly seeks out his occult advisors for supernatural information. And these advisors have titles like sorcerers, magicians, clairvoyants, seers, prophets, astrologers, and many other areas. Now, people make the mistake in thinking, you know, this is a bunch of bozos, you know, playing card tricks or something. No, their information had to really be supernatural, and it had to be 100% accurate, because if it wasn't, these kings would literally put them to death. I mean, if they came up with like one or two false answers, they were killed. So the only people that could survive were those that had legitimate occult powers. And the other thing we have to realize is that the role of a sorcerer and magician is not some Las Vegas card trick thing. If these people were real sorcerers and real magicians. They knew how to supernaturally use illusion to control an artificial reality or a matrix, okay? And that's how these kings receive their information. Okay, so there was a dream, a prophetic dream that the king had that involved economics and politics and power, and none of his occult advisors, the sorcerers, the magicians, so on and so forth, they all said this is an impossible dream to interpret. We can't do it. And the king was really PO'd, and he said, look, you do it. You give me your supernatural answers, or I will have every single one of you killed in the next 2 days. So they were terrified. And somebody remembers that Daniel is a prophet, and they dig him up, you know, from the bottom of the basement somewhere. And Daniel tells the king he needs to get the answers from the true God. God gives Daniel the supernatural answers to the king of Babylon's symbols in his dream. And the king is blown away. He's evangelized, because he said only Daniel's God is the only God that has the power to give this kind of information. And Daniel made a request. Now, this probably will blow the mind of most Christians listening, but Daniel's request to the king was this, because the king wanted to reward him. He said, one of the first things I want to ask for, king, is that you undo your order to slaughter and kill all these occult advisors. Now, that's surprising, because a lot of Christians would think, well, gee, he should have requested the killing of the king's occult advisors. But no, Daniel asked that their lives be spared. And then Daniel was given all kinds of power and authority. And the result was evangelism was occurring among these occult advisors. But the point is, these were not phony, baloney occult advisors. The same thing happened with Joseph and Pharaoh with the dream of the 7 years of famine and the 7 years of plenty. He had a court of occult advisors, sorcerers and magicians, etc. So that was real. Now we flash forward to today, and don't kid yourself, the politicians in many nations have all kinds of secret occult advisors. So the other thing is, though, that these occult advisors, like the sorcerers and the magicians, they had the ability to, and the witches, to put spells on people, to program them, like hypnotically, put them in a trance state. They used supernatural occult power to put people into a mind control state that was based on principles of sorcery. So when we trace the history of scientific mind control, it is interwoven with the history of sorcery and magic and secret occult societies. So when we arrive at the science of scientific mind control today, we have to remember it is still interwoven with legitimate sorcery, magic, and supernatural principles. That's why the Third Reich and Adolf Hitler were all into the occult, and they were utilizing magic and supernatural power to create illusions. Illusions are a necessary part of scientific mind control. That's why when Adolf Hitler spoke, he was using occult power and the power of psychological mind control. That footage of Hitler speaking to, you know, tens of thousands of people saying Sieg Heil, the giant Roman columns behind him. He's up on this massive platform, these large red flags draping down the Roman columns with the white and the swastika, which is an occult symbol from Tibet. And so Hitler's communication style and the way he is platformed with the light, the audio, the costuming and stuff, he's creating an illusion that he's a messiah, and that's what sorcerers and magicians do. And that helped enable the German masses to enter a trance state, hypnotic state, or a state of scientific mind control. Thus, the Nazis ruled through scientific mind control. Now, this is done in many areas of society, and I'm going to try to bring this on home quickly. But as you know, one of the highest ranking Satanist in the world, and I think he became the second highest ranking Satanist in the world, who also happened to be one of the highest ranking members of one of our top intelligence agencies, was not only a Satanist, but an expert on psychological operations. And he read my book, A Prophecy of the Future of America, and we went back and forth discussing it, etc. But in his book that he wrote for the U.S. military on psychological warfare, he brought in all the magical sorcery elements upon which scientific mind control is built. And to make it short, he very much talked about the usage of light, staging, makeup, what you wear, audio. The fact is, he was stressing over and over again to keep the masses in scientific mind control. In order to facilitate that illusion, you need to create a magical environment, an illusory environment, and then people will surrender their minds to it, and they'll believe that you alone have the truth and are an authority figure, etc.
Is that like what we see with the TV? The environment you're talking about, the fake reality, it's amazing. Paul, we got about 3 minutes before the break.
Sure.
But this is such an important topic because I don't think, even I don't understand, only being 34 years old, what life was like before, you know, even radio or TVs. And now we have computers that add to it also. But that dimension that, imagine life, you know, for the last 4,000 years without this extra bombardment of entertainment and voices in your mind. And now you're at a place where you can literally sit down in front of a box, turn on a fake reality, and zone out for 8, 12, 24 hours.
Right.
Sometimes.
Exactly.
And while you're zoning out,
you're being programmed.
Yeah, and how quickly that can happen as you depending on what you subject yourself to, the content. And we all do this willingly to a great degree. Some of us use it for information. Some of us use it for entertainment. Some of us use it for both. But it's a very powerful tool. And I don't think myself and many other people understand the true power that it wields over us. And it wields as much power as we allow it to.
You're absolutely right. So, are we up on a break here?
Well, we got about 2 minutes until the break.
Oh.
Do you have any advice on how to for people to break the habits of you know, being so dependent on the TV, whether it's reading more or doing more activities in your life? I mean, what are some of the things you do, Paul?
Well, yeah, that's a very important question, and I deal with it in Conquering the Matrix, because you can break, look, every single one of us in this technological society, to one degree or another, are a victim of subconscious programming and mind control, okay? Not to the extent that we're going to be mass shooters or something, but we're in a state of, we're all into a modified degree, a slight hypnotic state, a slight trance state, and we're all programmed and under the influence of scientific mind control to various degrees. The primary way to break it is to take, you got to be radical about it. Unplug everything that locks you into a virtual world, social media, the internet, television, music, all this stuff. There are times that you need to just sever the umbilical cord to that, because that's the mechanism by which you are plugged into this matrix. And this matrix is an artificial virtual world of control. But the way you're controlled is that you're connected primarily through media and computers to the programming of it. So you don't have to, like, burn your TV or something, but you need to radically separate yourself from it. And we can talk a little bit further in a moment about easy things you can do.
Sounds great. I can't wait to hear some of these tips and pointers. We're talking with Paul McGuire. PaulMcGuire.us is the website. His new book, Conquering the Matrix, we got it right here. Go to his website and order this book. It's a fantastic book, as always. Paul McGuire will be right back with us on the other side of this break. Don't go anywhere.
Just what kind of thriller predicts the future? In 3 days in the Belly of the Beast, Daniel Holdings wrote about the God Particle before CERN actually discovered the God Particle. In As the Darkness Falls, Daniel wrote about an Islamist terrorist confederacy that rose up out of Syria and declared a caliphate 3 years before ISIS was ever heard of. In his newest novel, Between the Veil, Daniel talks about a space between dimensions where supernatural beings can walk. He says that these novels are a warning from the Creator to his creation. Will war come to America? Will the world's economies collapse? Are we looking at increased earthquakes and volcanic activity? Will the United States fall into civil war? You can find all of Daniel's work at his website, DanielHoldings.com. That's DanielHoldings.com. All of these things and more are talked about in Daniel's books. To find out what's coming next, go to DanielHoldings.com.
Worldwide demand is making coconuts one of the highest-yielding cash crops available today. Coca-Cola, Pepsi, and many high-net-worth individuals have invested billions of dollars into coconuts for strong growth and solid long-term income. Yields could be as high as 18% or more per year. Capital appreciation and exceptional income for up to 60 long years would be an absolutely brilliant investment to pass on to future generations. Diversify wisely with direct ownership of fully managed coconuts on prime farmland close to the beautiful Costa Rican border. For more information, qualified accredited investors should go to profitsincoconuts.com or phone 855-888-6288. That's 855-888-6288. This announcement does not constitute an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offer made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288 or visit profitsincoconuts.com. Profitsincoconuts.com.
You may never look at your city, town, or its people the same way ever again. Stained by Blood, a murder investigation based upon a true story by private investigator Douglas J. Hagman. Using the character Mark Stiles, Hagman takes you on a journey behind the scenes where the homicide becomes secondary to an underworld of satanic ritual abuse, child abduction, and even mind-controlled experimentation. For 5 years, a brutal killer remained on the loose, free to kill again. As Mark struggles to navigate the maze of bizarre twists and untangle a web of deeply hidden secrets kept by some of the most powerful and influential people in his community and beyond. Stained by Blood. Order your copy of this engaging novel today at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood at HagmanandHagman.com and click on the link. Stained by Blood.